You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Life Spa podcast. I'm Dr. John Diard, and today we have a very special guest. His name is David Dalton. He's the founder of what's called Delta Gardens, which is where David has been researching flower essences for over 30 years. And Delta Gardens has a clinical practice. It's a very robust educational platform. They also do research. So David is really one of the rare experts in flower essences. They do research on it. He manufactures and produces some of these flower essences. I'm excited. As you know, I've written a whole ebook on different flowers that you can eat at different times of the year when they're actually in bloom. And the power and the medicinal benefits of flower is an unsung, amazing hero that you really need to learn a whole lot more about. So today we have David Dalton on our podcast. I'm super excited to have him. David, welcome.
I'm a big fan of flower essence. I don't know how many years ago I went to Europe, and not only were there just so many wildflowers everywhere, we were in Austria, but they found their way to on every single plate of food that we ate. And it was just such a crazy, different world than what we have here today, where flowers never make it to a plate. And if they do, you don't eat them, you know, because you're afraid that you're not sure if it's even edible. So it's an incredible world, you know, that there's so much to talk about from the Bach flower remedies, from the research on the emotional benefits from flower essences. And you've been doing this for a very long time, since the 1980s, and you are such a wealth of knowledge. I just can't wait to dive into this. I was so excited about this. I wrote an ebook years ago called The Edible Flower Guide. It's a monthly guide of what flowers are blooming every single season. And I put as much research to every flower as I could possibly find. There wasn't a lot. That probably ebook's probably almost 10 years old now. Just because I was so fascinated by this subject, but there just wasn't a lot of research. I didn't know an expert, and that's why I'm so grateful to have you on, because you are kind of the expert in this field. So kind of, why don't you start telling us a little bit about your history, how you got into this, and kind of, you know, what are some of the things that have really taken you by surprise with the flower essences and the benefits? You know, most people think they smell good and it's nice, but it's much deeper than that, right?
Much deeper. It's a good question. I began getting excited about flower essences in the 80s when my daughter, who was about 4 years old, one of my daughters, developed a rash on her crooks of her elbows and behind her knees. And we tried homeopathy, and we tried allergy testing, and we tried diet. We tried a whole bunch of things, and nothing helped. Right around then, I was reading a book that was a channel book by someone named Guru Das, and it was called Flower Essences and, Flower Essences and Vibrational Remedies. And there were, in the book, a bunch of flowers listed for eczema. So I picked four of them and I ordered them from the only place you could get them back then, which was Pegasus Products. And I tried them on her. You know, we took them internally. I put them on her arms, and the rash disappeared. And in 4 days, this very pussy, red, weepy thing was gone. Just a little scarring. So I had heard about the Bach flower remedies and how they affect the personality, but this was something totally different. It was like, if this can help a rash, what else can it do? And that got me very excited. And that's when I began, you know, I developed a quarter acre garden and started growing things and started making essences and trying them out.
So were you using any of these topically, or was it all kind of Bach flower-esque, where you actually just take it more as a homeopathic, where you just put the drops under your tongue?
I consider myself a researcher, and that means I tried everything. You know, if something was on the skin, then I put it on the skin. And if it didn't work, then we wouldn't put it on the skin anymore. We take it internally. Historically, you take the essences internally. But, there are a few I've found that work on the skin, work on the scalp. You can put it in a spray bottle and spray it on. You can put the drops on and rub them in, and there's some results.
So when you put it topically, are you talking about mostly just for skin type conditions, or are you putting it topically for other reasons as well?
With children, especially
Right.
infants, we use the soles of the feet as the best place to do the application because mothers are concerned about alcohol and chill for children. So you can use the palms of the hands or the feet, to but it, that's a little bit of a difficulty for some people, to do it that way. It's easier to pop it in your mouth. Almost all cases, that's how we use it.
Right. Is there, when I wrote the ebook, I was, I read a lot of, I wrote a book called The Three Season Diet, which is all about eating with the seasons, the spring harvest, summer harvest, fall harvest for winter eating, the idea that also the microbes and the soil change from season to seasons, the chemistry of the plant changes from season to season, and therefore when you consume those foods or those flowers or those plants, that you're actually inoculating your gut with a different stable of bugs with a different chemistry for that season. Do you find that? Because so I wrote, that's why I wrote the flower guide for April and May and June and July and August and September, pretty much the range, and thinking that that would be another way to entrain a microbiome and circadian rhythms with the natural circadian cycles. And so that's sort of the angle that I took it on. I wonder if you could comment on that angle, but also I kind of feel like you're doing it a completely different way, treating more condition-specific type of application. Not really sure, but can you dive into that?
We do use a different template than the seasons and the microbiome, mostly because, there are different plants growing at different times all over the world. That would be hard to make a system that would fit everything. We use more the system is, the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious, or chakras 1, 2, and 3 are a very helpful template for us. The chakra 1, about safety, chakra 2 about relationships and the emotions, chakra 3 about, the conscious mind and projection of the self into the world. That's kind of a good way to situate everyone. What's going on in those three places for you? And we've divided essences, to fit those different templates. We actually can look at a flower and at this point and see generally where it will fit in that structure. So basically, the physical symptoms are just one avenue into, the personality, the conscious and the subconscious. And so we, just try to see where people are in their journey and dive into that. So we're
So,
all I do start with the physical with people, and then we go into, what's underneath. With everyone, there's something underneath.
sure. Do you work your way up to the next four chakras, or do you stay in the bottom three?
The bottom three are kind of where all of the trouble is for people.
Okay.
And so when we perfect those three chakras, the others start working automatically. Now, that's not to say that we don't use essences that influence those chakras. It's just that most of the work on recovery, most of the work on trauma, most of the work on rebalancing the self is in those three.
Right.
So, there are essences that are for the heart chakra, for the throat chakra, for the other upper chakras, and we use those.
Nice. So you said something really interesting that I think you said that the structure of the plant can sort of determine what that plant might do and therefore what chakra it might work on. Can you give me an example of like what a structure for the first or second or third chakra would look like, or how they would differ?
Sure. First is the color, and second is the structure of the plant itself. So those flowers that are, let's say, flat have more to do with the conscious mind, like daisies. And then when they begin to fold inside, they become it's the flower saying, speaking that, we're for something deeper. And so those bell-shaped flowers like comfrey, are more for the subconscious. And then there are these very, very deep flu-like flowers that, like wild tobacco, coyote tobacco, that are very deep. And those have more to do with the unconscious, deep, deeper, deeper. The number of petals is also significant. So one of the first things I noticed in working with flower essences and comparing all of the flower essences that were available is that all lilies have something to do with the emotional body, with the mother, with relation to mother, with the feminine side. And that interesting because if you look at pictures of the chakra two, there are six petals on that chakra, six petals on all lilies. And so it just became a guide for us. So I'd look at a plant and I go, okay, it's a what part of the emotional body, what aspect it does. So something for chakra two will either clear the emotional body or strengthen the emotional body or go into the trauma that's related. And so that's where the color comes in. And so there's a lily called blackberry lily. It's deeply orange with black specks on it. And we use that for sexual trauma. It's almost the plant, the color and itself says, this is what I'm for. And so, when you explore something for long enough, when you observe, thousands and thousands, hundreds, thousands of flowers, you begin seeing patterns. And those patterns are useful in determining what the use of a flower essence is.
So how about the smell and the taste of it? Does that play a role since they sort of directly impact the limbic system and all that?
Yeah. You might say all of those edible flowers are nourishing in some way. They provide nourishment and they're like borage is a beautiful little blue plant and that's edible and that gives calmness and courage and lightness. There's a whole nourishment that happens to this. It's also a flat flower, so it's so if you were having some anxiety about things in the present, mostly related to the present, then that would be helpful. So I'd say nourishing. Hibiscus too is very nourishing, and that's a flower that we use for the uterus and the whole pelvic area.
So the flowers that you use are not only edible, or do you use non-edible ones and make essences of them? Is that what I'm hearing, or no?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, the whole world is the classroom. There are, 500,000 different species of flowers. And so I started traveling back in 2004 to different countries, to make essences to see what's the difference. What's the difference? What's this one like? And so, yeah. So the question now again was,
Well, just I think a lot of people might think that I'll be happy to take an essence of an edible flower or eat an edible flower, but I think folks might be concerned about taking an essence from something that might be inedible or poisonous in some way, shape, or form.
yeah, I have a set of essences from poisonous plants. That's where I was getting to. I was interested seeing what they would do. So first of all, I made the flower essences mostly under the moonlight rather than the sunlight. There'd be less transference of the physical. And then started to try them. What I found is that these essences are really good for kind of shamanic journeying, that they help you drop very quickly into a dreamlike shamanic state, guided visualizations. And so they have a very deep working kind of catalyst, a poisonous plant. So pretty much anything is, except, so let's see, there might be some super poisonous plants, don't even touch them, and we stay away from those.
Sounds a little bit like Carlos Castaneda, where these poisonous plants obviously have a purpose on the planet. They're not just, to be completely avoided.
Right here. Castaneda, by the way, is one of my heroes. I think I read every one of those books and couldn't wait for the next one to come out.
It's making a comeback, those books, actually. It's interesting.
Lot of controversy about Carlos and, whether he was real or not. But
What's your take on that? I've read a lot about that controversy.
I feel like nothing in this dimension is pure. And so one is his contribution and the other part is his life, and I just try to keep those separate. I can't imagine him making up these stories. They're just too complex and wild and deep and entertaining.
Yeah, no, agreed. 100% agreed. So years ago, there was a good friend of mine, Rick Scalzo. You probably know him. He comes from your area in Massachusetts. You're in New Hampshire. He founded Gaia Herbs, and he used to hold these like retreats on an island in Maine. And one of the exercises, like a 2-week retreat, one of the exercises would go into the wilderness and find a plant that would be like their kind of special plant that they would get to know and look at and visit every day and talk to it and pick it and smell it and taste it and do everything you could to get to know it. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, you were supposed to present your plant. A plant, of course, is something that you didn't know what the plant was, and you just did it sort of how you did, kind of research it and try it out and experiment with it. And what he found, which is again and again and again, everybody, when they actually delivered their discussion about what that plant was, it was like better than the Materia Medica, better than the Book of Herbs, better, just really an effective way of actually understanding what the plant's purpose is on the planet. I wonder if you could go into a little bit more detail on the when you're walking through a garden and you see a plant, are there any other physical characteristics that people can learn today and go, oh yeah? I mean, I love the fact that the longer the flute, the deeper the impact on the consciousness, right? The flatter it is, the more on this plane we're talking, right? I wonder if there's, maybe I tell me if I got that right, but are there other structural features that people can use, off the cuff, that can give them some insight of what the plant is trying to tell them?
Starting with the color, I think this part is really important. There are two connecting channels for the meridians in the chakra system. One goes up and one goes down. The one that goes up is red, the one that goes down is blue. The red one is stimulated when the adrenals are stimulated, when there's fight or flight or excitement or anxiety or anticipation or even like work at work, the red one. The blue one is for relaxation down, and it stimulates chakra one. So the first thing would be which direction, like is it mostly red, mostly blue? It's going to be something in between, but does it have tinges of red in it? Does it have tinges of blue in it? There are very few blue flowers in nature, and you might say the blue channel is something that we have difficulty with, relaxing, sleeping, resting, going offline. Think it's the reason why there's a lot of inflammation in the system, too much red and not enough blue. So we look at generally the blue, whether it's going to be calming, and is there some blue in it? Like borage, again, is calmness, courage, happiness. Bluebell, another one. Bellflower, another one. Anything with blue in it. is going to get our attention. And not just blue, but the red, like red cedar, for instance, that color is not just really red, it's red with blue in it. You know, there's a more maroon to it. And so
Right.
those are very interesting because, you know, like red cedar is one of the essences that we use mostly for stabilizing chakra one, you know, keeping things calm down there. The stimulation, usually those flowers will fall into another category that we call catalyst. They'll make something move. A lot of what's wrong with people is stagnation. Something's not working. Energy is stuck. You know, fear, anger, suppressing emotions, all of those things hold energy. And the catalyst flowers tend to move energy. People taking one of those are apt to have some kind of, you know, I wouldn't say unpleasant experience, but something's on a surface that they're going to have to process. And that's why we use those. So I think those are two kind of structural things related to color. Then there's the shape of the actual flower. Is it what's it saying? So for instance, like a snapdragon type of flower with jaws in it is usually something to do with the animal nature. You know, the daisies are, as a class, usually related to chakra three. And have something to do with self-expression, thinking, identity, the mind. You know, I mentioned about, you know, the six petals. And then there's trees, you know, all of the tree flowers. You know, Bach, you know, nearly a third of his essences are from trees. And so I think he was giving us an indication that there's something there to explore because of their stability, you know, because of their bigness, which is like earth sign. They're all very helpful for chakra one, stabilizing, safety, grounding. Well, those are a few things.
You mentioned being able to track kind of the elemental components of a plant or a flower. And obviously, if something has more earth in it, it's going to be maybe more a tree flower and therefore more grounding. Would that make sense? Or something that has more fire or air, ether? How does that work?
Well, now all these questions are something that I've tried to, you know, structure and settle in the book
Right.
that and that's so the elements are another key for determining what a flower essence is. You know, you can make a flower essence, it has no value until you research it and discover. So earth flowers are big like trees, or they're round flowers like hydrangea flowers. They also have very deep roots. They like rocky soil. They tend to like the shade. Then we get up to water. They're watery, juicy. They grow near water, they grow in water, and then fire. they like the sun, you know, they like bright and hot, and they have that color red too, a bright color red. So those are, and then the air signs, you know, hollow. You know, if they're hollow or the wind, they have some kind of mechanism in them that responds to the wind. The birds and butterflies like them. Those are all to us air. So we look at the color, we look at the structure, we look at the elements, and that's just the beginning. That gives us a little scaffolding. But then we do what your friend did, and that's we give them to a lot of people. You get these. I used to get these focus groups for flower essence. I'd get 30 people in a room and I'd give them a bottle and they'd all take it. And then they'd write down their experience after, you know, 15 minutes or so. Then we'd collect them, and then I'd go around and ask people afterwards, and we look at where were the consistencies in it, and where were the anomalies, and we get kind of a range of where it could work, and we'd also get some indication. Then we start giving it to clients and start seeing like, well, what's it doing? I've seen, thousands of clients over 30 years, and so they get to be part of the experiment. First, we research, and then we start giving them and see if they, provide what we think they provide.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Just so everybody remembers, we're talking to David Dalton. He wrote an incredible book called Advanced Flower Essence Healing, and you can get a great amount of detail about David's work. And it's a real fascinating, I think it's an incredibly fascinating subject. In the Ayurvedic world, it's said that the more subtle something is, the more powerful it is. Think microbiome, right? You can't see these little bugs, but they govern everything. Circadian rhythms also pretty powerful on this planet. We can't see them. These flower essences are something that I kind of think we do take for granted. And in our culture, like I said earlier, we don't think about them as medicine. We think about them as something beautiful to look at, which is wonderful. But there's a healing potential there that you've discovered. And you talk a lot about kind of emotions and how to unblock certain emotions. Can you give us like an example or maybe a case study of someone, what they were going through, and how do you combine the flower essences with some psychological techniques or mindfulness, or how do you put all that together, or do you put all that together?
Yeah, well, that's the point, is to put it all together. To, Dr. Bach was convinced that disease did not come from the body, that it came from someplace else. And so all of his essences, to delve into the personality, just, Bach's intention was to eradicate disease, not to just kind of like have a little something for the personality. So, and that's been the direction of the work. And so, the first thing I explore with people is, what's physically wrong? And then we look at everything else. We look at, their lives and the stress in their lives and their history and their medical history. We look at their trauma history. And we start putting pieces together. We take this puzzle and put it together, and then we begin working. Not just on the physical, although I'll say most people come to me for physical issues, but how did those get there? If we're following Bach's, paradigm, we start looking deeper. The only thing that Bach was missing was, it wasn't that he was missing, we hadn't explored trauma and the effect of trauma on the psyche, on the emotions, on mental emotional patterns, and on the body. And so I would say it's the intention of flower essence work to put all of those together. So let's see, a case study. So let's say a woman comes to me, she has severe anxiety, the kind of anxiety that while she's talking to me, she starts shaking. So we can give essences to, calm the anxiety, which is one thing that I did. But then where did that anxiety come from? So it turns out that this person had, some severe trauma when she was 10 years old. She would be attacked by a boy in the neighborhood and dragged into the woods several times. And she's been carrying this, let's say in chakra one and two for a long time. So then we give essences, to start moving that trauma. Usually lilies, and then maybe trees to keep things stable so that this starts moving. So we're doing two things. We're trying to calm, the ambient anxiety, and two, we're trying to get at the roots of it. And so they get a take-home bottle. So I'm really careful with trauma. Because when we start giving essences that move, that are catalysts that start, getting at these things, then there's some disturbance that happens. And so I usually give someone a combination to take just at night, just before they go to bed. And most often the processing help happens in their dreams, and the rest of their life, is not disturbed. So they do this for 3 nights. And then, we wait and see the effects of this. This woman carried this anxiety all the way through her 50s and 60s until one day when we Googled the person's name that she was her perpetrator, and he had passed away, and she felt free.
Wow. So these are really working. It sounds kind of homeopathic like, where you're treating this on a vibration, but it's also the scent of these flowers are really something special, and obviously has direct connection to the memory centers and the hippocampus and things like that. Is it a combination of the two where it's more vibrational medicine, energy medicine, or is it more mechanical affecting, the olfactory sense and therefore the limbic system? Or
It's,
maybe something else?
well, we're talking in the world of energy. We are starting to use the word frequency, and the word frequency is something that we carry, a bunch of different ones. And you might say the frequencies, just like if you were listening to music, one comes up and then it's all over, and then another one comes up. And so the idea is to create a condition so that a person's frequency, total frequency, increases. And so the tapes that they're listening to are not disturbing. So they're not worried all the time. They're not anxious all the time. So I don't know how you, if you separate that from mechanic to, flower essences, those frequencies, they work on many, many different levels under many different conditions.
Right. So it doesn't sound like that when you make an essence, you're soaking that, you're extracting it in alcohol, correct?
I was ready. We use a bowl, a
Yeah.
really clean bowl, usually, 12 or more ounces, and we float a few flowers on top of the water. And that water, then 3 hours later, and that 3 hours came from Bach's working with dew on flowers. His first flower essences were dew drops on flower petals that had been in the sun. It takes about 3 hours for that to evaporate. So that water then gets mixed with brandy and put in what we call the mother essence. This is the mother essence. That mother essence is the concentrate we use to make the bottles that people get. And this what we call the stock bottle. So that has, just a few drops of mother essence in it. So that's the process. There's not so much a distillation as there is a transference. The sun's energy on the flower on the flower in the water creates a pattern. Now, I don't know if you got them, but I sent you some pictures of these
Saw
patterns.
that. Yeah, thank you.
So what's exciting about those patterns is that there's a visibility that you can see something. The thing about flower essences is you can't see anything. Like my taxi driver in Uganda said to me, when I explained what I was doing there, he says, how can you tell there's something in this bottle? So that's one way of making it visible. When I was a kid, I remember walking to school on a very cold morning and past the florist shop and seeing these floral-like patterns of the frost on the window. And next door was a machine shop. And the patterns were all block-like on that. And I just remember, I probably was like 9 years old, just being fascinated by this. How did this happen? How could this be? And so you get an imprint, and you can call it a frequency, you can call it an etheric imprint. Some people call it an archetype. Some people say that it's the fairies, and I don't exactly go there, but something happens that you can see, you know, if you put the petri dish and a drop of the essence and put it in the freezer, you know, 20 minutes later, you'll see a pattern. And they're all different.
That like keys to unlock, and kind of in the quantum world they call, when the field becomes physiology and the physiology creates a pattern that becomes more rigid, that what causes those patterns are called attractors, which are like negative emotions or whatever. And it creates incoherence or decoherence in the physiology and rigid patterns. And those rigid patterns have to be kind of have to, become coherent once again. And there's really good research on coherence, brain, heart, breath. You probably know that. I wonder if that is a potential mechanism for how these essences work. Are they actually building coherence? Obviously, they've got these incredible, almost like crystalline structures, right? That may have an effect on creating less rigidity in the physiology and therefore, openness to change, like flowers seem to be very open and very vulnerable and very delicate when they open, therefore, representing something along those lines. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think coherence is a really good word to use. One of the ways we observe that is when people start getting better, everything starts getting better in their lives. When I began using the flower essences, I followed this whole, procedure that I learned that we should follow, which is, you just work on the emotions. That's all. Just work on the emotions. So I would do this with people, and I would see improvements in the physical body. I would see improvements in their life. Like, remember one person making, all of a sudden she started making more money, and she started, pruning out some of the bad relationships in her life. The whole system starts to work better. People start becoming happier. That's when we start paying attention to the upper chakras, because are happier, and there's no more. It's like, well, what are we doing here anyway? And what do I want to do? And then some of those spiritual goals start to appear.
How about structural issues like, an injury or trauma? I mean, it seems, hard to fathom that something so subtle could affect something so dense. Is that also on the menu?
It's on the menu, and we're careful to, when we see something that's not really in the middle of our menu, to refer it out to people. But I've seen a lot of, let's say, bulging discs are from some kind of inflammation or infection in the system, which is on our menu. And so, for instance, Lyme disease often causes back problems, the bulging disc. And when we work on the bulging disc, the back problem resolves. There are many other subluxation kind of things that we don't work on. But there's one flower essence, which is lilac, which is, in the channeled research says, it helps with the spine and scoliosis, and but we don't have anything conclusive about that yet.
So, would that be the one for bulging discs, lilac?
No, we use essences for Lyme disease, which is teasel. The teasel essence.
Wow.
The teasel flower is very unusual. It's a little prickly comb, and it has these little belts in it. And the belts, fall off, and then other belts, And so we made a set of essences out of all of those belts. There are seven of them on a healthy comb. And treating Lyme disease, the lower ones tend to help with the lower pain issues, and the upper ones, with the headaches and neck kind of things.
Well, it must be fat. I mean, it's obviously a never-ending story. You can never learn everything that these plants have to offer, right? So you must be just living in this world of total fascination and imagination and trying to understand and speak the language, yeah?
That's exactly true. That's exactly true. I think every year some new idea, some new flower, some new direction comes. We're basically a system for determining what's going on in the physical body. There's a 22-page booklet that I made, that contains all of the infections, toxicities, traumas, emotional things, organ testing organs. So I'm always, it's 22 pages now. We're adding 10 more. We're exploring things like, cholesterol, spike protein, the liver and the gallbladder and its condition, and can find out enough information there to guide us to which flowers to use.
So that's above and beyond your book, right?
Oh yes. Yeah,
So
that's a guide that the practitioners who train with me use to unlock what's going on. So if you have a symptom, I can
right.
tell what's behind it.
Wow.
We don't use the word diagnose, and if I find something that people don't know that they have, I send them for a clinical test, and I'll tell you that, 90 something percent, I'm correct with it, so
Really? Wow.
trust it. Yeah, I trust it.
That's impressive. So, it's just such a fascinating world that when, like in homeopathy, when you measure it, there's nothing in it, right? So that's how they get away with, making all these claims and so on. But there is something in these essences you create, right? It can be measured, yeah?
You can measure the effects. You can see with Carilion photography the effects, and you can see, but you can't really take a flower essence and find anything in it yet. I think as our instruments become fine, I mean, we're in the quantum levels now, and so I'm certain that measuring things on those levels will determine something.
Yeah, absolutely. It's from the Ayurvedic perspective, that's the cause of diseases when the field becomes the physiology, and the physiology forgets that it's, structured from field, particularly if intelligent field, perhaps even conscious. And so that whole point of Vedic science was just to restore the memory of pure consciousness into the physiology, and creating those rigid structures, patterns, rigid behavior, and somehow creating levels of coherence and resiliency and flexibility and openness to that coherence, which is a vibrational entrainment versus, building rigidity, which is tough on the planet Earth because gravity tends to concentrate things. We seem to just keep getting concentrated into becoming more and more dense as we get older, right?
Not just that, we become, at least in this culture, more and more focused on the material. Where we live, how much money we have. The food. There's such an overwhelming, pull in that direction that it's really hard to even think about these things called, coherence and, raising vibration. Some people who started to see me, they don't even have the time. They don't even have, an hour a month that they can put aside to do the work.
And the work would be obviously, therefore, more than just putting some essence under your tongue. Obviously, there's more to it, yeah?
Well, more to it is like, well, let's follow that thread. Put that in your mouth. What's happened? Come back and let me look at all of these things in your life that were at a certain level and see what's changed. Some people generally are not aware of subtle changes in their life, even, when they're obvious to other people. Sometimes I say to people, like, take this and have your husband tell you what he sees is different, and they usually there's a lot more information there.
Yeah, it's the language of feeling and interoception, something that we just think and analyze, and we don't, I guess our culture doesn't realize that there's more to communication than just thinking, you know, analytically. It's the whole concept of feeling, you know, is the language of the soul, right? And that's sort of what, you know, when you start to experience these subtle changes, I have a hard time sometimes with, because I just, like you said, people are just, there's so much density and so much, you know, fascination with the space around us versus the space inside of us, that it's sometimes hard to, that's why I think your work is so cool, because you're having really profound results with people on a physical level, you know, tweaking the most subtle frequencies that somehow must have this cascade effect where it's literally affecting the density of the physiology, right? And that's what's happening, right?
Right. So, you know, for instance, people with Lyme disease, I've noticed nearly all of them, higher than 50-60%, are type A personalities. That means there's doing too much. They're doing too much and they're not taking care of themselves. Too much energy out, not enough in. And so besides learning about, you know, just the physical symptoms and the dietary changes that need to go with that, and the essences, you know, people have to make some changes in their lives. You know, I noticed some people, when they first came to me, would say, I got Lyme disease and boy, has it changed my life. I've slowed down. And then there are others that come in and they say, how soon can you get rid of this so I can get back on the horse, you know, and do my life? And so I think the best client for me is somebody who's positioned, ready to change. And usually it's pain that puts people in that position. They're ready to do anything. That includes like trying flower essences. You know, I ask people, how did you get here? Well, I tried everything, nothing else works. I'm going to try this. I'm in so much pain that I'll do anything. Well, do you know about flower essences? And no, I don't care about them. So when people are positioned by their lives to be open, they make really good clients. Change happens very quickly.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I mean, sometimes we have to be kind of knocked over the head before we realize that, you know, the road less traveled is the road that we were meant to be on. And unfortunately, we just stay on the highway with all the lights and everything. And it's easier to do the same dumb thing again and again and again and never even realize it. This is so fascinating. David, could you share with us just how people can get a hold of you, how they can work with you, you know, how they can get more information? Be great.
So, website is deltagardens.com. And there are two books out. You know, the newest one is that, you know, the Advanced Book of Flower Essence Healing, and book I wrote 20 years ago called Stars of the Meadow. Both of those you can get from Amazon or booksellers anywhere. The first book is more a very thorough investigation of 40 different flowers, flower essences. And, you know, there are several pages, mostly if you start looking on, you know, the internet about flower, you'll find a very little description. So that first book has a long one. So if you, through the website, contact the office and you can find out more. We have a few practitioners available. Sometimes my schedule is so full we have to close. I have to close my end of the practice, but we still have other practitioners who are very good.
Beautiful, beautiful. That is amazing. What's your history like? What were you doing before you did this, or this is what you've always done?
Good question. I taught high school, mathematics and psychology for a few years, and I got into corporate training and organizational development, which was fascinating, which was in a way the same thing. You're looking at parts in a whole, and you're trying to get the whole structure to work. And that was good. So, then I started having children, and started getting really interested in gardening and flowers, and then all of this florescence thing crept up on me. It was like, you ever see those cartoons where someone puts a trash can over someone's head and bangs it, and then they take it off and their head is going like this? And that's how it felt when I started getting into this. It's like all of these lights went on. I could feel like, well, purpose. It was very exciting.
Wow. Yeah. And what a world that you must be living in. I mean, it's such a beautiful world to be surrounding yourself with every day. It must be fascinating. I think it's wonderful. I think the work you're doing is wonderful. Have there been any studies done on this? Studies on the work that you're doing and the effects, or is it still, not quite there yet?
Really good question. I'm glad you asked it. We're now doing a research with Mass General Hospital. And what we're doing is we're taking a preparation that I've made for Epstein-Barr essence, the Epstein-Barr virus, and we're going to be using it on, B cells. And we're going to do a double blind and to see how that works. And then we'll take that, depending on what we find, we'll take it to another step, and we'll use people, and we might use other essences too for different things. So that's exciting. I think there've been some double blind experiments with the Bach essences in Europe, maybe three or four, not many, but Europe's gone a little farther than we have. They've even have a they have a guild, a nationwide, find a practitioner kind of thing. We're nowhere near yet that yet. In Brazil, flower essences are one of the main applications for illness.
Really?
Yes. I
I
think it's mostly they can't afford they can't
yeah.
afford antibiotics or medical treatment that we have here. And so homeopathy and herbs and flower essences are in pharmacies there.
Wow, how beautiful, how fascinating. Yeah, in the monthly guide that I put together years ago, I mean, our whole thing at LifeSpa is to take ancient wisdom and find science to back it up and put the two together. So I did at that point, a very thorough rinsing of all the science that was there, all the Bach research was there, and I put that in that ebook. There wasn't a lot, but definitely I put, I cited those references in there because there was some. It's so nice to see that not that research really matters that much in the world of like the P, you already got a full schedule, you're already helping so many people get it. It works clearly. But we are so far removed from what real healing is in terms of Western medicine, and since we speak the language of science on this in this culture, I would sense that the plants are rooting for your research to actually show the truth about what's really happening, because it's not a fixing of a problem, it's a letting something more real out, right?
Right. And then it takes time. It takes time. If I walk out on the street and I ask people how many of them know about flower essence, it might be 1 out of 10, maybe 2 out of 10 even know what they are, let alone know what they can do. And the main difficulty is, well, this part of the work is, when you start working on the physical body, you're in an area that's a little, legally vague. We're careful not to promise anything and to let people know, this might work and this might not. And then we don't advertise. We don't advertise that, well, you can get this essence for this illness. We can't.
Yeah, no, you can't. And I think it sounds like you do it really the right way. You know, I follow the same rules. We can't practice medicine without a license. We really can educate people to hopefully at the end of the day let something real out. And these flowers are sure seem to be like a very beautiful key to unlock specific doors that that hold people, you know, sometimes hostage, I would imagine, and then their body reacts over time with pain.
Good way to
Yeah.
put it, hostage and prison, and people have no idea how the prison they're in until they start to get out of it.
Yeah.
It's kind
With
of deep.
all this quantum field work that's happening, it's becoming more and more like common knowledge that, you know, that we don't have to be so separated from the field, and the field is creative intelligence, and there can be coherence and resonance between the two, and that's a whole different world to live in than how we were. I know how we grew up. I think we're in the same generation. How we grew up, that wasn't a thing, you know.
I think I'm a generation ahead of you, but we use that quantum entanglement principle in a monthly service that I provide people, which we call Devic Healing Temple. And we have, we get about, 7,800 people online, and I'll generate a field of flowers. We pick five flowers and what they're for. And those people are, they're miles and miles away, but they're receiving. I'm transmitting this essence to each one of them because we're all sharing, the same entanglement. And we get some beautiful, what I ask people to do is, what happened? Tell me what happened. And we get some beautiful experiences, including some physical healings. One time I said, well, we've never had anybody throw away their crutches and stuff. And the next time a guy said, well, I had to use crutches, because of, this virus I had. Anyway, he says, I throw them away. You can tell people that they can throw away crutches. Anyway, that was amusing. But yeah, we do
It's
that.
been, that's so beautiful. I mean, the quantum entanglement is really, I'm so glad that you're doing that and you're experiencing that, because from the quantum physical world, entanglement only happens in the unmanifest. It's not here in the manifest. That's a very clear distinction between the science, what the science says. However, what you're experiencing is something completely different. I think a lot of people are experiencing something completely different, but that has not been, they haven't come to terms with a mechanism for what you had just experienced it. They wouldn't call it quantum entanglement, but this is something that I really feel like academics becomes a very rigid body, which is sort of part of the problem. And
Yes.
when you yeah, but anyway, it's a whole nother story. Like David Bohm, who was really much more open to this idea, one of the best physicists of the 19th century, was really open to, that the field and the physiology, that there was a strong connection between the two. And that's what you're experiencing. These fluorescences are sort of what I like to call gap therapies. They're both frequency and they're both particle at the same time. So they function at the gap between the field and the physiology. And if you were trying to restore the memory of consciousness field into the physiology, it would be really good to enhance the space that exists between the two, that exists as both field and physiology, both as field and particle. And that's what these essences seem to function at, that very, very subtle level where they're both vibrational and particle at the same time. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, the string theory says that even particles, they're not really particles, they're vibrations. They're depending on the frequency, you get a different particle. I think we get hung up in the material world and the science-based material world on particles. It was always like, oh, what's the particle? What's the particle? So we just dump the whole particle thing out, with the string theory. Everything is really not a particle. Even particles aren't particles. They're just a series of frequencies, that are vibrating at a certain level.
Yeah, David Bohm said they go back and forth constantly. So, go from the implicate to the extricate constantly, but back and forth. So it's not like it could be a manifest as something solid in 1 minute, but it could be something completely.
Our job is to take all of that, that's unmanifest, that's etheric, that's a frequency, and make it work on the physical level so that people are experiencing it in their bodies, in their minds, in their lives, and that their lives are changing. And I think Bach had like 3 years where he could research his essences before he passed away. And I'm well past 30 years of doing this. And all I can say is that it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. The context becomes wider and wider and wider, and the possibilities just become endless.
I love it. I love your work. I wanna. I'll stay in touch with you. Do you have a newsletter people can follow, or is it?
Oh, we do. We do.
Oh, good, good. I'd love to stay on your list so I can keep in touch with you, and then when the research comes out, maybe have you back. But I just think my audience is, I think, this is right up their alley, and they're gonna love you and love what you're doing. So, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Hi, everybody. I just want to take a minute and tell you what we do here at lifespa.com. I've been in practice now for 40 years, 38 of them have been practicing Ayurvedic medicine full time. For the last 20 years, I've been writing articles and doing videos on the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with the modern science. If something's been around for 1,000 years, still practiced today, and you have modern science to prove it, boy, I really feel like that's something we should all be taking a look at. And that's what we do at lifespa.com, and all that information is for free. So just go to lifespa.com and search in your health topic, and you'll get the information, the article that you need, hopefully that will help you. While you're there, check out our Ayurvedic store. You can get there through lifespa.com or go to store.lifespa.com. And there we have all of our organic Ayurvedic herbs, organic skincare line, more books, tapes, knowledge that we give you is all there at our store. All of our cleansing kits are there in our store. All of our herbs are whole herbs with the natural occurring microbiome, the way it came out of the soil. And that's critically important, because if I took the bugs out of you, you'd be completely different. We take the bugs away from a plant, like sterilizing and making an extract or spraying your food with pesticides, you lose significant benefit of that plant. And that's why we use the whole plant with the natural occurring microbiome. So check us out, learn more about what we're doing here at lifespa.com. And we'll see you again.
This recording is brought to you by LifeSpa, where ancient Ayurvedic wisdom meets modern science. Get access to free health video newsletters by Dr. John at lifespa.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.